to 6:00 PM. Shall we call the council meeting to order?
There's plenty of time for switches.
A moment of silence, please. Will you join me in pledge of allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Kelly Hopkins.
Here.
Dennis Olson.
Here.
Bonnie Onion.
Here.
Paul Greenrow.
Here.
Ken Opplinger.
Here.
Clark Cotton.
Here.
Harry Robinson has requested to be excused tonight.
Second.
Second.
I'm sorry, that was, okay, thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye, unanimous. And let's see, now we have recognitions and awards. Sherry and Mr. Wallace, please.
Okay, this is for our reserve camera person, if you want to come forward. And this is the first time that I'm aware of that we've actually sworn in a reserve in front of the audience.
Great.
Would you please raise your right hand and repeat after me? I state your name.
I, Tim Rickerson.
Accept the obligation and responsibility.
Accept the obligation and responsibility.
To serve and protect the citizens of Blaine.
To serve and protect the citizens of Blaine.
As a member of the City of Blaine's Police Department.
As a member of the City of Blaine's Police Department.
I recognize this oath as my commission.
I recognize this oath as my commission.
To uphold and maintain the public trust.
To uphold and maintain the public trust.
And shall therefore conduct myself.
And shall therefore conduct myself.
In a lawful and professional manner at all times.
In a lawful and professional manner at all times.
And will to the best of my ability.
And will to the best of my ability.
Perform my duties as a Blaine Police Reserve.
Perform my duties as a Blaine Police Reserve.
With honor, courage, and discipline.
With honor, courage, and discipline.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now I'm pleased to announce that we have a Blaine Builder Award for Aaron and Kelly Tusky. Will you please come forward?
That's right.
Let's see. Aaron and Kelly owned the Blackberry House Cafe in Blaine for almost 7 years. Their vision for the Blackberry House was that it would become a hub in the community, a place to hang out, as well as for groups and businesses to meet. It has served as a place to have study and music groups, business meetings, job interviews, birthday parties, and as a music venue. They also had a vision to start a soup kitchen, offering free meals to those in need in the community. Along with others with the same passion, 9 teams, including several churches, as well as other groups, began serving a free weekly meal starting last September at the Blackberry House. The Blackberry House not only has served as a hub for the community, but also as a home to Aaron and Kelly, who live upstairs in the cafe. Both their children, Ian, 5 and a half, and Anna, 3 and a half, have lived there since they were born. They have enjoyed watching the kids growing up in the community, as much as having the community watch their kids grow up over the years. Aaron and Kelly have benefited from the experience and challenge owning Blackberry House. They say they are ready for a new adventure, a simpler life, and paid vacation.
I would add that the program that the Tuskys were involved in establishing is now moving to the community center, and will be that great program will be carried on there. We're just working with Carrie Williams and putting an agreement together. So what they have started is continuing, and we're happy with that. So thank you.
Do we have any sign up?
No one signed up.
Would anybody in the audience care to make a presentation? Seeing none, written communication, Sherry.
We received an email January 13th from Dean Prather regarding the Exxon station on B Street. An email dated June 14th from Ann Beck regarding Project Homeless Connect. An email dated June 19th from Seascape Homeowners Association regarding the Peace Portal Community Trail Project. An email dated June 20th from Sherry Burrell regarding the Gateway Pacific Terminal. And an email dated June 21st from John Urich regarding fireworks.
Thank you. Commission, committee, and board reports. Let's see, Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee, Clark.
We're having our first meeting 9:30 in the morning, and we have managed to recruit about seven participants, and we have a guest, a special guest, Mr. Offlinger.
Northwest Economic Council, Clark.
I'm going to a meeting this Thursday morning at the port in Bellingham at 7.
That's Wednesday, isn't it?
Wednesday.
Okay. I'm sure it's on your calendar.
7 a.m.?
7.
P.m.
A.m.
A.m.
They're all at 7 a.m. in Bellingham.
Blaine Tourism Advisory Committee, Ken.
I had copies of the vision statement passed out at the last meeting, Gary. I wasn't sure if that was something we needed to take action on to formally receive, or but they've had Council has now had it for a couple of weeks, and I just wanted to find out whether it was something more formal that we were supposed to do with it rather than just a copy of it.
I don't believe that there is. There will be an opportunity. We'll be presenting a suggestion to you later this evening about spending a couple of meetings updating the strategic plan, and it seems to me that there is a section in there on tourism. That might be the appropriate place to insert that, and then that's approved as part of the approval of the plan set. That might be the way to do it.
Okay. Well, Mr. Mayor, then I think that's maybe the way we'll go with it, unless there's any comments or questions anyone had from having passed it out and having had a chance to read it. That's all I have.
Seeing none. Blaine Chamber of Commerce, Bonnie.
No report.
RED Loan Committee, Bonnie and Jeff.
Jeff, is there any?
I haven't received any responses from banks.
Really?
Received any?
You put out an RFA or P?
No, not yet. Just letters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I'll do some follow up.
Okay.
WTA board. The board delayed its meeting for that should have been held last Thursday. It will be held this coming Thursday. Other than that, no report. Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory Committee, Shirley.
No report other than the fact that the red tide's closing down Shellfish Harvest Stadium. That's it.
Library Committee, Charlie.
I was ill and missed meetings.
Senior Center Liaison, Dennis.
The 4th of July, they're going to start serving breakfast at 7 o'clock.
Good. Planning Commission, Michael.
No report from the Planning Commission, but I would mention regarding the Park and Cemetery Board that the board is working on planning for what has always been called Steen Street Park, an area at the end of Steen, near the intersection of Steen and Blaine, along Cane Creek and I-5, and they're kind of coming up with a master plan for development of that property, and any input on that would be very welcome. They are planning a neighborhood meeting or a public meeting on that coming up in the next month or so, and I'm looking forward to
Law and Justice Council, Chief.
No meeting and no report, Your Honor.
Small Cities Caucus, Gary.
The Small Cities Group met. Their last meeting was at the Bellingham Airport, and the primary agenda item was to to meet with the county executive, Jack Lowes, to discuss the some proposals for reorganizing the Economic Development Initiative program, which is a fairly significant source of money that's available for communities to do economic development projects. And so there was some good discussion. I think Jack was listening carefully. I think the EDI board, Ken, did you guys meet this week yet?
Well, we met this morning, as a matter of fact. And Jack provided copies of our proposal to everyone on the EDI board, and there was unanimity of opinion that that was the direction we needed to go in. And so I think all of the recommendations are going to be they're going to be reviewed. I think most will be taken up immediately. The funding portion of it may be delayed until their next biennial budget, since they've essentially already spent their 30%. But it is something that Jack did have to admit in front of everyone that he had asked for years prior to getting elected. Now that he was, he probably needed to follow through with it. So.
Yeah, the county currently takes 40% of the money off the top. They use it for primarily operational costs when you look at, you know, painting walls and repairing roofs and stuff. And our recommendation was all the money go into the pot, which meant that the county would have to give up 40%, which is really kind of unrealistic to ask them to do in 1 year. And so I think at the Small Cities Caucus, we recognize that it was something that they have to phase into. So, and we thought that when we came up with the plan too, that it was a negotiation. And so it's a very important, what Ken and I are reporting and discussing is something that's very important program. This is the same money that we received to build the two park-ins, or the funds that came from the EDI program. And there are a number of good projects around. Ferndale did a river walk, and there have been a number of good projects that have been accomplished with those funds. So it's great that Jack, who was a mayor for years and complained about this with the rest of us, now has to step up and put his mouth where his money is.
Mr. Mayor, if I could just add one more thing onto this report.
Please.
The other thing that was discussed at that meeting, and I wasn't actually at it, but I sent some materials for review, was that, as you know, the Port Commission has been discussing the potential of increasing from 3 members to 5 members. And in talking with some of the mayors from some of the other small cities, there was some concerns about how that would occur. The proposal originally had been that it would go from 3 existing districts, they would keep those and they'd simply add 2 at-large members on. And because all 3 of those districts have a pretty significant part of Bellingham, and then there was the potential that all 5 of these people could be from Bellingham and the rest of us wouldn't do any representation. And so we had a resolution passed at the Small Cities Caucus, and the Port Commission reviewed it that evening when they had their meeting, which essentially, it was fairly long, but it essentially said, we're not going to take a position on whether you should increase to 5, but if you're going to do it, you need to do it in a way where you create 5 new districts, and 2 of those need to be a majority non-Bellingham. And in fact, what I had spoken with some of the Port Commissioners about separately was having one that would be centered on Ferndale, Birch Bay, Blaine, and another that would be centered on Linden, Sumas, Everson, Nooksack, and the other 3 could be part of Bellingham, but to really make sure that the rural parts of Whatcom County are represented, and that's essentially what the commission did at their meeting last week. So that will be coming up on the ballot. If it does pass, it would essentially be in the November 2013 election that we would have 5 new districts, and we'd be electing our Port Commissioners out of those districts.
So it would be by district?
The way the Port Commission is setting it to the ballot would be by district, that's correct.
Now, would population in those areas be taken into account?
Yeah, I mean, essentially the rules are when you draw these up that you're going to have even population in each of the 5 districts. Mm-hmm. And then every 10 years when they do the census, then they would redo those just like they recently did for the existing 3 districts. So.
Okay.
Thanks.
City manager and staff reports.
Okay, we'll start with Raven, Public Works.
Evening. First, I thought I'd give you a brief project update. As you probably have seen, the Peace Portal Community Trail Project is underway. and we're very, very pleased with the progress the contractor has been making. He tidies up the site every night, working with the private property owners on different drainage issues and such. In fact, making some modifications to the driveways at Nikki's just today as a result of input from them. The 8th Street bid opening has been delayed from Thursday to Friday. We were in conflict with a bid opening in the city of Bellingham. We wanted to make sure all the frustrated contractors who didn't get the McLeod Roundabout project scribbled down their pencils a little tighter and gave us a good bid on 8th Street. So we're going to open on Friday at 1 p.m. and we'll be again bringing that to you on the 9th of July. I wanted to also share with you a recent success that I've shared with the city clerk, a nice partnership between Sherry and I. Essentially an idea to bring more interns to our wastewater facility. Because we have such a state-of-the-art facility, we have an amazing opportunity for students to learn from it. And I contacted the processes instructor at Bellingham Technical College pretty early on in my tenure here. We have since signed a contract with the college that enables students to sign up with us and get college credit for helping out at the plant. We're going to, you know, do full, you know, safety screenings with them and background checks just like an employee of the plant. But the other side of that is that that we have the advantage of working with these folks and giving them some real-time experience toward their certification. You need to get a certain amount of hours in the facility to get. And that kind of coincides with just our, you know, our desire to continue to communicate to people, also working together within our community, providing a mutual opportunity. And I'm really happy to say that, without Sherry's help, this would not have happened, first of all, so thank you. And secondly, that starting today, we had the first of our students start. So they're going to work, hopefully, full-time over the summer and then transition to twice a week during the school year. And we are open 7 days a week, so it provides that opportunity.
That's nice.
And then finally, I wanted to respond to the Friday Bellingham Herald article about the Sumas Blaine aquifer and the nitrate contamination. I put up a picture here that came right out of the DOE report. And I highlighted the study area and also the approximate location of our watershed. And I want to underline the word approximate because there's no scale on this drawing, no reference points, no roads. But it was very clear based on kind of the alignment of Dakota Creek and where these tributaries are coming in, approximately where our watershed is. So the first point is that the study area lies significantly outside of our watershed where our wells are located. And if anything, our wells are providing the aquifer with some clean water going back the other way because we're on top there. Our watershed wells are mostly deep, and we have a good surrounding clay layer of soils. The problems they're having in this study area, and specifically around Linden, the soils in Linden are generally very sandy. So what's deposited on top of the ground ends up getting into the water supply, and thus the nitrate contamination. And then finally, I just wanted to remind you of this wonderful report that we put out every year. It talks about our water quality, and in it you'll see that we are tracking nitrogen, and the nitrate levels in our water are a tenth below the reporting levels required. So I just wanted to give you some assurance that the results of this study do not necessarily apply to our watershed. Yes?
Charlie?
The implication seemed like it was that the idea that we're in the Sumas aquifer living or something like that. So it's the article seemed to say that we're in basically the same aquifer, like we're drawing from the same water. Now,
mm-hmm.
Is that I mean, are they drawing from shallow wells over in that area? Is what they're talking about? Maybe make it clear enough in that article?
As I understood, most of the water sources in the article are reporting shallow sources of water. Yeah. I know, in fact, there are homes in this area that have to import water by travel.
But the deep water wells have really nothing to do with that article.
That is the reassurance that I wanted to provide, that and to let you know that we will continue to test for nitrogen.
Call the Herald and tell them the facts.
Well, I think that the title of this watershed is unfortunate. But it is a historical title, so I don't think we could be correcting the state.
It leads to people on Facebook talking about this.
Yeah.
Because of that article. I mean, it's just stupid. And the other, I have a question about, they are putting barriers down where the paths are going to be, barrier mat for the path on Peace Portal.
Oh, where the path is going to be, the barrier mounts? Are you talking about sidewalk?
Right, they put barrier down so the weeds and stuff don't grow up through the blacktop.
Right, yeah. And we also put it's a requirement actually from the state spec, it's called soil residual herbicide, and it's actually in the asphalt mix itself. So, and then finally, I just, the last meeting, I was asked when we were going to be meeting with Puget Sound Energy on the service areas, and this is all ties into eventually getting the light poles up on H Street. Mm-hmm. That meeting has been set for next Monday, so I didn't have that date when I was here last time.
Great.
That's all I have.
I have a question.
Bonnie?
Where is that area in relation to our watershed? Like, how many miles away? Or,
I mean,
again, is that just way the heck
over
there?
This map has no scale.
Yeah.
So I just approximated it based on where the creek was here. I can't tell you. It's very frustrating to see a map published in a report like that
true.
And there be no reference points.
Yeah. So our watershed is on that map, though, somewhere. I mean, it's
our watershed
she's
is approximately where this X is right here.
I can't read that, but that is where ours is. Okay.
Yeah, I tried to put an X.
Right. Well, she said the creek was there, and
I
didn't know if
sorry
that
about
meant
that.
The watershed.
The water is
okay.
A huge area. I mean, it's not just there.
I only work with what I was provided in the report.
So the fact that it's close to Blaine, I guess they call it Blaine's Humus.
Well,
a lot of it's over Linden, but Linden's not actually included in it.
Yeah. Linden's kind of the source of the problem, so it's too bad Linden's not.
Yeah, it's not called Linden's Humus.
Yeah.
And it's important,
anyway.
I think, to also keep in mind that watershed or the topography of that area, and since watersheds are by nature below ground, the topography there is low-lying, and our water, where we draw our wells from, is up on a ridge, and that border highland there, the majority of the wells are well above this area. And now, there's all sorts of interesting things that happen in geology, but typically, that water's not going to flow uphill into the areas where our wells are.
That's a good point Michael makes, because I think that might be kind of some of the concern about this, is if we look at this just planimetrically, it looks like, wow, it does get into Blaine, doesn't it? Or it's close,
it
or whatever.
Like
but the reality of is that aquifers are dealing with what's below ground, not just where it is planimetrically on the ground. And so if we're looking at our watershed being protected by pockets of clay and much deeper, it's called a soils profile anyway. And so the water source is much more contained. That being said, like I said, this is something that we continue to test for, we're required to test for, and we will continue to provide that information to you as well. As
can we get that word out there somewhere?
Jeremy,
somehow?
Get that word out already.
Blaine Sumas, not here.
Is
there a relationship with the other Schwartz that was
there? No, there's
no
relationship
with Ralph
Schwartz.
So it was
kind of one interesting thing that I learned a while back is, in terms of aquifer, is that the kind of the geomorphology of this whole area is at one point in time the Fraser River channel actually came down into this area. I mean, these rivers move a great distance over millions of years, and
I don't remember that.
But what is now, like the Nooksack was the Fraser at one point in time, which could account for the soil types that you have in that area. It almost shows you how that would flow down in that study area. It looks like.
Wash it back into there. We do have considerable reports on our water system as well as the hydrogeology of our system, and it all relates to our water rights and so forth, and it's voluminous amounts of material. So I didn't come prepared to present on that today. Certainly, if there's an interest, we can do more of an informational session on that. But my basic point was to just reassure you, it's just the name that they're using, and it doesn't have a bearing specifically on our water system.
Yeah, I'd really like that to get out there, because we're known for our good water in Blaine,
right.
And I'd like to continue to be known for that.
Well,
it really is good.
We just did the we just sent out that consumer confidence report about a month ago. So anyone could just open that up.
Yeah,
say,
if
really?
They would. Yeah.
Nitrate, no problem.
Okay, Chief. Two items for you. One is, I just want to give you a preparation for the actual revision of ordinances, which we're going to bring forward over the next couple of meetings. Wanted to give you a bit of a heads up and just list for you the ordinances that we have identified for updates. It's been over a decade since we did a code scrub of our criminal ordinances and our traffic code. And owing largely to the energy level of our new prosecutor and his ferocious typing speeds, we're able to get to something that has been lingering for a while. So these aren't all of the sections that we need to update in our criminal code and the BMC over the next several months, but they're a good start. They're the ones that we have run into as cases proceed, and we're kind of addressing it on that from that perspective. As we run into these problems, we want to continue fixing them. We're not going to bring a new ordinance to you every time we find a problem. We're going to batch them and present them as a group. But rather than take forever and present you with dozens and dozens of them, just every several months, we're going to present you with a new batch, and this is the first one. So over the next couple of meetings, we'll present you with the actual changes in ordinances, redlining out the parts that we're changing and adding in bold the new language. But this just gives you a heads up in case you have any specific issues that you wanted to bring to my attention or specific concerns. I don't think there's anything in this group which is problematic for anyone. Some of them are merely clerical, and some of them just provide additional tools to the criminal justice system to take care of business as we need to. But I'm more than open for any questions you might have either now or as we proceed forward. But you will see the proposed drafts at your next council meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you. The other item I just wanted to give folks a bit of note that we are actively looking to replace a police officer, Amy Bundy, who left a couple of months ago. Just want to let you know that we are proceeding with that endeavor. At this point, we're looking for both entry-level and lateral officers. A lateral officer is someone who's currently certified in the state of Washington and has at least 2 years of experience. If we hire a lateral officer, we can save significantly on the startup costs of bringing a new officer on board. We'll keep you posted as that proceeds. Because of our attrition in the office over the last few years to remain within budget, we no longer have any slack
in our schedule or in our staffing to make do temporarily if we lose one of the positions. All the positions we have now are effectively essential to maintaining the minimum of two-person coverage for most of the day. So we're in a position where we have no slack and can't afford to have even one officer gone or one position unfilled for very long. Yet over the next couple of years, we have the potential of needing to replace up to four officers. That puts us in a bit of a unique situation, and it's one that we're going to have to deal with one way or another, and perhaps be coming back to it at a future study session so that we can discuss that topic. But I just want to let you know that we are moving forward with hiring one more position to replace someone, but we have to be looking long-term at this problem as we go forward. We're very fortunate to have folks such as Tim Richardson, who was sworn in here a couple of hours ago. The training those folks go through to be a volunteer reserve officer is long and tiring for them and their families. Tim was in the process in academy for over 6 months. It's over 300 hours of training time out of his life. All we can do is help him out with a couple of the tools and the uniforms to get there. And he did an excellent job, as each of the officers do. Every one of our reserve officers, and it's the same across the state, in order to become certified, you meet all of the criteria of being a full-time commissioned officer. The psychological, the physical, the testing, and all the criteria is exactly the same. The only difference is you don't get a dime for doing the job. So hats off to them. It is a great way to get your foot in the door in terms of a career, but it's not something that you do lightly, and it's not something you do in short order. So we do have, there is a separate a category under civil service for looking at currently certified reserve officers with your agency, and we do try to acknowledge that when we can, but it finding reserves is awfully hard. It's almost as bad as finding good police officer candidates. I think between local and state agencies, the average is somewhere in the about 3% of the applicants come out the other end as qualified to be certified police officers. Given the background process, the psychological process, the medical exams, it's very much an employee market right now. And we don't anticipate that changing. So I will keep you posted.
Mike, do the reserves get credit towards, as far as having put in time when they go to make application for a permanent job?
They do. Some departments will give you points towards your civil service score, for instance. Other departments actually have a separate list for their reserve officers and can hire off that list. And in any case, the best thing it does is provide you a huge leg up when it comes to the oral interview process, to be able to sit down and explain to the board your experience level, the fact that you have practical on-the-ground experience. You've already been through all of the testing procedures. You've passed your psychological, your background. You're miles ahead of where an over-the-transom cold applicant would be. So the answer to that, Dennis, would have to be yes.
Clark?
How many reserves do you have currently?
Right now we are down to three. We have one of whom is working as a provisional officer out of the area, so he is on administrative leave for the summer. Another officer who, because of his personal schedule, is not available too often right now because the boating weather is upon us. And the third officer is young Tim, who's just coming on board. Our fourth reserve officer, Jay Punches, left several months ago and to seek another career. At one time, we had 15 certified reserve officers, and almost all of whom are now gainfully employed in other areas. We're down to a point, it's become more and more expensive to train reserve officers. We used to be able to do it
at the department level, and we used to have reserve academies here. Now they're being conducted through cooperative agreements with community colleges. And Tim, for instance, is signed up and did his attendance at Skagit Valley Community College. So he commuted to Skagit Valley Community College for 6 months. And we have one applicant on board now and one potential applicant for the next Reserve Academy, which is to start in the fall. So it used to be you could train them in batches of six at a time, and now you're lucky to get one in per year. So.
Bonnie?
Define provisional.
For instance, it's Jim Griggs is our reserve officer. He's working as a summer provisional hire. Depending on the civil service rules in your community, you can, and the state regulations, you can work for up to 3 months as effectively a part-time officer. It could be full-time for X number of hours or months. It used to be looser, frankly. There were a lot of agencies, especially in Eastern Washington, which had provisional officers who actually had not been to the full academy. They were reserves, but had never been to a full academy and had been working for years. In Washington State, you have to be state credentialed as a peace officer, and your training records and your employment records are kept by the state, and they have had to tighten the reins on that over the last few years. So
they're on the payroll full time for a specific period of time.
Correct.
With or without benefits?
With benefits. If they, again, it can depend on the agency and how your labor contract is written.
Mm-hmm.
You have to abide by state and federal labor laws and guidelines. But most agencies I'm aware of, if they bring you on full time, because most police departments are union shops,
mm-hmm.
they do require that the person, even if he's only a provisional hire, be covered under the same compensation package as the full-time officers.
And those can be extended. If you have it set for 3 months, can't you extend it under certain circumstances or not?
Well, under local rules you can, but under the state guidelines, it's not considered kosher any longer.
Okay. All right. I think it's something we're going to have to look at budget time.
Further questions? Seeing none.
Okay. Michael?
Two things quickly. I mentioned at the last meeting that Gary and Alex and I have been working with a focus group in regards to developer who has come forward looking to potentially work with the city on redeveloping this site and some of the other city property here. On this block in the future, that includes members from the Planning Commission, City Council, Senior Center, Library, the Parkland Cemetery Board, and then some citizens who aren't on any official capacity other than just interested citizens. We had our third meeting on this past Thursday, and basically it developed to a point where there's a conceptual plan that the group is in support of and thinks ought to move forward and get some consideration by council. So. We are looking towards possibly scheduling a work session for maybe before the next meeting to present that to council and ask council to look at the conceptual plan and consider that. See if you want to take some action on that, perhaps at that meeting or the following meeting. Is there anything else you wanted to add, Gary?
Well, the committee itself has been excellent. We've had, well, in our last meeting, we had three council members, but Ken and Dennis have been sitting on this ad hoc committee, and we've had representatives from the Senior Center and the Library, Planning Commission, just a fairly broad coverage of
business
people and programs that would be interested in something happening on this site, and they've really done a good job, and I think have prepared pretty thoughtful recommendation for you when you get it. And the developer that's proposing, he and his wife are very intelligent, articulate, well-prepared,
people. At the last meeting, they brought in an investor to sit in on the meeting, a gentleman from China who got quite a resume there. Reading his business card. So, who knows what's going to happen, but nothing will happen if you don't give it a shot. So, nothing ventured, nothing gained on something like this.
Clerk?
Michael, I don't have the people at the Marin or Marin, however, I don't know what the name is this week. Have they finished the permitting process?
Have they finished the permitting process?
Have they been given everything they need?
No, they have not submitted a building permit application at this point.
Do you expect it soon?
I do. I expect it any time now.
I know they're working on one building there.
Yeah, they're doing some cleanup work and that sort of thing, right? They have purchased two of the buildings from the bank, those being the completed building and the one that's about 80% complete or so, or at least it looks like that from the outside. It still has a whole lot of work necessary on the inside. And they intend to finish that building. The other one they just intend to condominiumize, as was expected all along, and sell it. So they're moving forward with that effort. They'll probably, I believe they're going to have an open house coming up here soon on this weekend or next for local real estate agents. And they're just ready to go on that, have a sales office open there.
Yeah, my conversation with them was through the ASC, and their superintendents, their construction guys are here, their salespeople are here, they've found housing for them. I mean, they're like engaged.
Yeah, it's all moving along. They just haven't submitted everything they need for a building permit yet. And then they are, they have an agreement with the bank to potentially purchase the third site, which is...
Have they actually asked you for a special consideration for price?
Mm-hmm.
Remember we talked about price?
They did, yeah. They did back at that point.
Okay.
Yeah. So then my other item here was just to really report on downtown cleanup, but actually I'm going to just bring up some pictures here, and I think the cleanup went really well. Gary was going to speak to it a little bit, I think. Let me see if I can get these on the screen.
This is the second year that we have... had a downtown cleanup right before the 4th of July, the purpose of which is to kind of do some work around the center part of town just to make our community sparkle a little bit more and present a good image to the many thousands of people who are going to be coming to Blaine in a week or so. This program has grown pretty significantly from last year. This year we had over 40 volunteers, and the exciting part of, or one of the exciting parts of this year's program was, as you will see, we had a lot of kids helping us out. We had a preschool group, we had Boys and Girls Club. Who the heck else did we had several youth groups, here you go, that came to assist in the cleanup of the community, and these young people, I mean, they actually did some good work. I mean, they kind of patrolled the area and picked up a lot of stuff and helped us out a lot. We had some regular volunteers that come out for everything that we do. We had some new people that we hadn't seen, and kind of the I think the heart of this operation are our own crews, our public works people, except for the guy that you're seeing there, and Raven's crew, who really do kind of help organize and do some of the more technical work and work with volunteers and enjoy that. So without our own guys, this wouldn't be nearly as successful. We worked on a number of places throughout the community. You'll see, you've seen some of the pictures. This is one of the the landscaped areas where they've gone in and pruned. This area is down by Tom Bridges, that big building down there. They went in on that street right away and just cleared the heck out of it. It looked like a jungle. About the only help we got out of Lazenby was that he cooked hamburgers. He's not into physical labor, but he can flip.
I don't believe that.
He can flip a mean burger. I worked my butt off. You have me up there. Mm-hmm. But it was a good time. Folks here, many of our folks here at City Hall were involved in organizing it. Debbie Harger, as usual, takes a very active role in organizing this kind of thing, and she was very much involved in this, and Debbie Shirk and Fran. I know that I'm missing people, but our employees, not only at Public Works, but some people from here at City Hall kind of joined in and helped with the registration and food and a lot. So it was really a good effort of the community and our own employees. It's going to be exciting to see what happens next year. Is that where I was?
That's where you were. Yeah. Meeting in Browers.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's going to be exciting to see what happens next year.
Well, that's a lot.
Because of the growth that we experienced from 1 year to this year, I think that this is a program that really is catching on, and we're going to be able to do some even more exciting things next year with the people who come out. This is the area where they did a lot of work driving mm-hmm. down through there. I mean, just if you go down there now, it actually looks kind of nice.
Gary, you realize they found 6 parking places in there?
Yeah, that's where they were.
That's where they were.
Yeah, they thought they lost them. Anyway, it was a lot of fun, a lot of good hard work, a lot of good results from the people who worked. You can see that this is serious work that people really get into it and do a good job. So. We actually had a couple city councilmen out there, worked really hard. Councilor Oppinger and Dennis Olison.
That's
there.
Proof right there. There's Dennis.
I would have been there, but I had to go to my paying job.
Did that address this letter from the Brazers about the Exxon station? I noticed this is the 13th. This happened after that.
That letter was sent before the volunteer day. And
that's what I thought.
We actually worked at, we had some volunteers,
at that
primarily
spot.
Gary, working at that site.
Mr. Prather actually emailed me the next day and said, well, I walked by you, you took care of it, and was very pleased that he had such a wonderful response to his
email. That's great.
I used the weed eater on that whole place. I mean, and it still didn't get it all.
You couldn't use the weed eater on the building itself?
I could have. Anyway, it was a good event. Looking forward to doing it again. We're going to have another event this year on Make a Difference Day in October. And it'll be another community event. And the emphasis will be to clean up other parts of the community, working with church groups and scouts and others to clean up places throughout the entire community that need it. And so we'll begin planning that program, and I think it'll be fun and it'll be successful as well.
I would just add one thing, and what I found so noticeable, not only the community participation, which was fantastic, but was that some of these things that we were working on, they're not for the 4th of July. We do this before the 4th of July, but they're for every day, and they're for year-round. And some of them are things that will last a long time. Like some of those trees that you saw pruned, it took 15 or 20 years for those trees to grow. And now that they're gone, if we don't let them grow right back, it has staying power, and it'll be really nice to see it expand, because you don't need to go back and do all that work again next year.
it will, you know, it will grow, and the area that's cleaned up and just looks better will get bigger and bigger every year. That's all I have.
Okay. Let's see. Jeff.
Well, it's that time of year again to start planning for the 2013 budget. And included in your packet is a budget calendar and budget process. So in the calendar includes some important milestones, legal dates that we have to meet, as well as, at a minimum, a couple of council study sessions. And we've put some dates in there along with some of the more of the time frame of what we do. Beginning in July, I start putting together some revenue estimates, then meet with department heads in August and September. Then by October is when we really get into the meat of the budget proposal, and that's what we submit to the council and have you review it over this time period. And Gary's going to talk about the strategic plan.
Any of you don't know that we do have a strategic plan in the city, but it has not been updated for several years. We went maybe as many as 4 years ago. It's the last time that we took a look at it. So many of you, most of you, have never really had any input into that plan. So what? Every year we threaten to do some strategic planning work prior to getting into budgeting, which, geez, is emphatically interesting concept. So this year we're going to do it. I guess we're going to do it if you want to do it. And Jeff and I talked about setting aside two off Mondays in July to work on updating the strategic plan, and that would be on the 16th and on the 30th. Of July. We would spend a little bit of time, a couple of hours at each session, and go through what was done in the past, update it, add what needs to be added in terms of goals and activities that we need to accomplish those goals. So it's actually kind of a rewarding activity that you get involved in, and it makes you think about what your community is and where you would like to see the community go. So anyway, we're shooting for the 16th and the 30th. So July is going to be a busy month on Mondays because you'll have council on the 9th and the 23rd, and then work sessions on the 16th and the 30th. So hold those Mondays open, unless you feel like there's something that you don't want to do.
Is one of those also we're going to discuss the new proposal for this area on the 16th City or the Hall. 30th? City Hall?
No, that
property.
Would be a separate study session, we were thinking.
That would be
on a regular night.
Yeah, that would be
on a regular night, okay.
That would be a study session prior to your meeting on July the 9th.
Okay.
We'll be talking about that project. That should only take about a half an hour.
Okay.
We'll get some information out to you in advance on the strategic plan, get you a copy of the last work that was done, and so you can begin taking a look at it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Who's next?
Sherry.
Sherry, do you have anything?
Just to say that Cheryl will be out for a few weeks, and I think we'll be able to cover.
Did you get all the volunteers you need for car judging and all that sort of stuff?
I'm sorry, volunteers for
the judging the cars and stuff on foot?
Yes. Okay. We have volunteers and backup volunteers, and things are moving along. We have people stuffing bags, and we've got a new process this year for people to sign up for the show and shine, which hopefully will move them through a lot faster. Usually at the very beginning of the day, you'll see big line going all the way down the block, and we're hoping that we'll be able to speed that up a little bit.
Cheryl won't be here for that, huh?
No.
For the 4th.
Okay, anything else, Sherry?
I don't think so.
All right. The only other thing that I have, I would just report to you that the City of Blaine received a wellness award from the Association of Washington City. It's a kind of a fairly prescribed program that city like ours became involved in, and they have a fairly it's not regimented, but it's a very well organized program to help employees of the city improve their health. And our employees, many of our employees, sign up to participate. And they get involved in various activities, training, and other kinds of activities to try to begin living a healthier lifestyle. And if you accomplish all of the requirements that the wellness program sets forth, then you become a wellness city. And is that what it's called?
It's a well city.
A well city. And one of the benefits of being a well city is that you get a discount on your health insurance rates, which is what I think was about 2%. But we have shifted away from the AWC health program, so that's not necessarily going to help us. But we do have a healthier workforce as a result of this, and I think that we're going to continue a program like this in the city, even though we're going with another health program. City, we put a little bit of money into this in the budget. Mm-hmm. I forget how much, Sherry, do we?
About $2,500 for this year. This is something that the council passed several years ago, a resolution that would provide the opportunity for the city to work towards healthier employees, which obviously helps a lot for, you know, as far as productivity and the Wells City Committee that was working on this actually put in a couple of years worth of work to get it to be a Wells City. It wasn't just something that happened overnight. Certain criteria had to be met, including such as the resolution, having senior staff on board. We had to do specific things to meet the different criteria. It was reviewed. Some of the stuff got kicked back. And Debbie Shirk did a lot of work towards getting the information into the system so that we could be a well city as far as AWC is concerned.
And that's all we have, unless you have any questions of us.
Gary, is there anything new on the pavilion?
There has not been a meeting of the pavilion committee for quite a while. I think one of the, I was thinking about that today, Lynn Templeton is leaving for a position in California. And Lynn was one of the was a key person in this effort, and so we're going to have to, I think, regroup and kind of see where we're going and where that program's going. So I guess the short answer, Dennis, is I'm not sure right now. I think we need to sit down and kind of see where we're headed.
I was asked about it.
Yeah. My Rotary Club last week put $15,000. We've committed $25,000, and we put $15,000 in the community foundation towards that $25,000. So I hope that it just doesn't fall away.
I don't think that it will, both with Lynn leaving and then, of course, the club is having its major fundraiser coming up here in a week and a half, and all their attention has been on that. I mean, once you get past that, you're going to see the Boys and Girls Club corporate sort of jump back in when we get that thing.
Anything else? All right, that does it.
Question about the training session and public meeting act.
I can answer that. Yeah, it's at the Planning Commission, and it's at 6 o'clock on Thursday. John Sitkin will be there, and between John and I, we'll be just giving a presentation and training on the Public Meeting Act, as it says, and also to some degree on Robert's Rules of Order and process with, you know, motions and mostly answering some questions related to those items. So you're welcome to attend. I think if everyone were going to come, Sherry would need to know, or if more than three of you were going to come, Sherry would probably need to know, because it probably needs to be noticed as something other than just a Planning Commission meeting. But if anyone has interest in sort of a refresher on some of that information, that will be Thursday right here.
We have no public hearing tonight. Moving on to the consent agenda, would anybody like to remove any of the items as listed? Seeing none, do we have a motion to approve?
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Okay, all in favor of approving the consent agenda, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. It's unanimous. Council action items. The first one is Resolution 1608-12, supporting the establishment of a passenger rail stop in Blaine.
An item that Council Member Onion brought to the council some time ago, I think when Bruce Agnew was here for another meeting, and there was some discussion, and there were some representatives from White Rock and Surrey here with their resolution supporting a passenger train stop in Blaine, and at that time we discussed developing our own resolution in support of that. Since then, there have been a couple of other meetings and opportunity to gather additional information. Bonnie has been kind of taking lead on that. Last week, she and Ken and I met with Bruce Agnew and kind of got an update on what was going on and began thinking about what the strategies ought to be in the near future. What are the things that we need to begin undertaking? And one of the basic things that we need to do is to go on the record endorsing this as a city. And Bonnie and Ken can fill in better than I, especially if, well, both of them, but Bonnie has taken a real active role in this. But I, from my own standpoint, I can tell you that I have gone from someone who was just kind of yawning about this a few years ago to someone who's really excited about it. I think that we really have an opportunity here. It's not going to happen overnight, but there are some good, strong signals that are coming from some key people that Blaine is being positioned as an important part of passenger and regional rail programs in the state of Washington and along the Cascade Corridor. So this is a
our hope is that you will support this resolution and that we can take it and begin using it to work with other government leaders to try to get ourselves established as a key terminal point for some of these rail programs. So anyway, Bonnie, Ken.
Any discussion?
Well, I would just say that, okay, do you want to make a motion and get it?
We can do it in either order, I think. Please, Bonnie.
Okay. If we pass this resolution, and this is important, an important step, I believe, along with the other communities that have done the same thing, to urging WashDOT to put the Blaine stop on their master rail plan. That's the first thing that has to happen before officially that has got to happen. After we do this, and I certainly hope it will be unanimous because it can be nothing but good for our community as far as I'm concerned, I would like to see a letter go, and this is at Bruce Agnew's suggestion, a letter under Mayor's signature on behalf of the council to Governor Gregoire and the BC Premier, basically probably enclosing a copy of our resolution and kind of reiterating what's in the resolution, because we're going to need real assistance from the BC government too in the way of funding and support, governmental support as well.
We have that from most of the border cities already, right?
Yes, and Langley has been, I think it's Langley has been added, wasn't that right, Ken?
That's right.
In addition to Surrey and White Rock and the Surrey Board of Trade as well. So it just keeps growing, the support from the Lower Mainland. It's something that was talked about for White Rock for a number of years, and Blaine even supported that, or at least the Chamber, Blaine Chamber supported that at some point. But now White Rock is not feasible anymore, and the Lower Mainland people want to see this happen in Blaine. And it is becoming more and more of a strong and real possibility for this to happen. And Bruce Agnew is a terrific source and resource. He knows all the players involved and how to go about making this happen. So it's not going to be overnight, like Gary said, but it's important that we support it. So I guess that's all I would say. You have anything to add, Ken?
No, I mean, I appreciate the fact that you've done all this legwork in getting this together. I think you know, the key thing that I've made real clear is that I believe that there is a real possibility that we can get this train stopped. I am of the opinion that that is a separate matter from whether we use the existing station itself. Mm-hmm. And I think the resolution's been crafted in a way where we say our primary goal is to get the stop. If we can do so and use the existing station, fine, but we're not going to allow use of the existing station to in any way impede our mm-hmm. Desire to get this train stopped. I think
absolutely.
That's the way it goes.
Absolutely.
Clark?
Yes.
Time for a motion. I make a motion that we approve Resolution 1608-12 supporting an establishment of an Amtrak passenger rail stop in Blaine along the route between Seattle and Vancouver.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion?
I just have one thing.
Bonnie?
On the resolution, the 5th, whereas, that maybe you say 750,000 potential riders instead of customers?
Passengers.
Or passengers. Riders. Yeah.
Potential, yeah.
It's just, it's not a big thing, but I just thought that might be. But I think this is. It covers just about everything. So.
Further discussion?
Just a kind of a general question.
Dennis?
The funding for this is that in the process? Or?
No, it's essentially what we're asking is that WashDOT decide that this is something they want to see happen, at which point they would end up having to conduct a study, if you will, to figure out what the cost is going to be. And then once they do that, then we're going to have to work with them to try and figure out how to pay for it. Now, there's about $200 million in investments that are in the process of being made on the rail lines now. That's all separate from this. But we think that with the substantial support, I mean, it's sort of odd for a community to get resolutions of support for a station in your community from three other cities before you even do this yourself. So we think that because of that support from British Columbia, that what we can do is say, all right, this is something that's going to be for both countries. We need both countries to step to the plate to pay for this. And I think that will encourage WashDOT maybe to move forward on getting the study done and figuring out what the cost is going to be so that we can get it figured together and we can work with Victoria to try and get the funding package put together for this. But at this point, there is no funding.
I think what's in the back of your mind is this going to cost Blaine anything? I don't think, certainly not rail improvements and that sort of cost, but eventually we will probably have some costs with improving that area down there and establishing parking spaces and, you know, that kind of cost if it goes on to city property. And maybe even if it doesn't, I don't know exactly what partnership we'll have with Burlington Northern, or because most of it's going to be their property because it goes over. They have a pretty wide right-of-way there.
Why don't they provide the parking?
And maybe they will, but somehow I can't believe it's not going to entail some cost to us in some improvements.
Yeah, and
surrounding.
We're not encumbering ourselves at this point for any amount of money. Now that you bring that up, I certainly understand where you're coming from. I guess from my perspective, I'd rather have the problem of trying to figure out how to pay for the station than not have the problem at all because we haven't been asked to put one in.
So. I would too. Exactly.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. It's unanimous.
Our next item is the bid award for the New City Hall remodel, and Michael will lead you through that.
So we had a bid opening on the 19th. And we received three bids for the project. The information is on the back of the request for council action. One thing I wanted to clarify in here is it indicates the architect's estimated range was between $210,000 and $290,000. That was actually what we advertised as the expected range. The architect's estimate was $250,000, and that was the number, and then they encouraged establishing a range when we bid it, when we advertised it, so people would, you know, seek to find lower cost alternatives. Clearly they were a bit off, but estimates came in at $306,000 to $340,000, and with the low bid being $306,900. Staff's recommendation is to accept the bid and authorize the city manager to sign the contract with Emerald Builders in that amount. We will possibly not do the alternatives, but we did want to be authorized to be able to do the two additive items if we want to go that way. And I did want to mention that this, given that this did come in higher than we anticipated, it does put some constraints on budget. We had budgeted $338,000 for the remodel security and information technology AV components of this. Some of the AV and IT and security elements are built into that construction. As an example, all the cabling for information technology is built into this project, but a projector for the ceiling in the council chambers is not in this budget because that's not a construction item, that's a separate purchase, but all the cabling for that and all cabling throughout the whole third and fourth floors is. So it's kind of a mix there of the different budget items. Any questions on that?
Eric?
I have a question. Is there another one that's going to, does this include all supervision and everything? Are we doing the supervision ourselves, or are we going to hire another company to do that, or?
We're actually planning to do the supervision ourselves, but there's some possibility that we may contract with the architects to do that, and we have an estimate of $5,000, not to exceed $5,000 if we opt to go with them. However, that is not budgeted, so we're looking at doing that internally. It's a little bit different than something like, for instance, a road project, because the road project, we don't have an inspector that automatically does that necessarily. So we sometimes hire an inspector to do that and that kind of thing. Whereas with this, of course, we have a building official and he inspects all construction like this. But we are looking at
other staff oversight or architects' oversight on things like making sure, for instance, that the carpet is the right carpet and the wall paint is the right wall paint, because the building official, well, honestly, he doesn't care that there's any carpet, and it can be any wall color.
Okay. Ken?
Move approval, of the bid and authorize the city manager to sign the contract with Emerald Builders in the amount of $306,900.50.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. It's unanimous.
Okay, the next item is budget amendment, and Jeff will run you through that.
This amendment adjusts two funds, the equipment reserve fund and the street fund, and that's for the purchase of a new tractor mower by Public Works, and they're purchasing that off of a state contract, and we're budgeting $25,000 for that purchase. The funding fund for this purchase will come from the equipment reserve, and there's more than enough in that reserve to cover the cost. And Raven has any specifics regarding the mower that she can answer any questions.
Any discussion?
I move that we accept or we pass ordinance 12-2015 budget amendment.
Do I have a second?
Second. I have a question.
Okay, any discussion, please? Clark? Yeah.
Is this going to be offset by the sale of that other tractor, some of that money?
Yes, yes. Some of it will be, yeah.
Okay. Certainly. How much do you expect that other tractor to sell?
How much are you willing to pay? That's the question.
We're estimating about $5,000 in parts. The transmission's totally fried, and it has some other problems as well.
So, in other words, they buy it and bring their truck to haul it off?
Realistically, it's actually going to about cover what we've got in repair estimate, because they had to take the whole thing apart to figure out that the transmission was dead. Unfortunately.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Chair votes aye. It's unanimous.
Yeah, the fourth item is an amendment to the engineering contract for Reichardt Navy for construction management. Raven, whatever your name is.
Yeah, some lady at the table here. I kind of alluded to this in our last meeting when we awarded the Gateway reconstruction. It's typical for us to do the professional services for our projects in two phases, one for the design and then come back for construction services. The reason for that is at the beginning of the project, you don't know all that you're designing. You don't know all the different types of complexities that the project's going to have until it's designed and pretty close to bidding time. So that kind of adjusts the cost for how much inspection is going to be and, you know, how long. The length of the project often dictates the amount of the cost and so forth. So. The other thing that Reichardt Navy is helping us with is also the permitting for the crossing of the railroad track. So in any event, we feel their cost is fair. You know, this is going to provide us relatively full-time inspection, which we think in light of the location and complexity of the project is warranted.
Any discussion?
Yeah.
Clark?
This is for oversight, correct?
That's right.
Now, if we come to the point that we're doing so much of this and we're going back and paying these guys a second and third time, like all that stuff that happened down there and on H Street, on all the past, that we could actually afford to hire somebody to do this?
Well, you know,
because
that
the Great Harbor cost us a couple $100,000. I mean, that'd pay for a pretty fancy engineer.
Yeah. You know, certainly it's something that I can work up some cost for you on in terms of our future projects. We don't have as many projects planned for 2013 that we currently have under construction in 2012, and that will largely affect that particular suggestion. I could say in my past that I have had internal inspection as well as surveying in different parts of my career, and oftentimes it's great to have those types of bodies in the summertime, but sometimes you're scrambling for work for them in the winter, so they really need to be a very diverse type of employee that can do an assortment of things. And right now, for example, with the Peace Portal project, we have one of our engineer techs out doing construction inspection on that as a trial to see how it works and so forth.
So if some engineering company designs it, then turns around and bids it as the inspector, is that it? Do you consider that a...
They're not bidding it. This is still a professional service.
Okay. So
yeah,
it's
the bid is for the construction itself, but not for the inspection. Okay. You want to have a separate party for that. I would say that the work that Ty's been doing on the Peace Portal has really been very successful, but it's taking away from his other summer duties like development review and updates to maps and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it is difficult in a jurisdiction of our size to have that level of flexibility. But I'm happy to look into that if you'd like.
Further discussion? Seeing none, do we have a motion?
I move we authorize city manager to execute amendment 1 with Record EBU Engineering for the construction management services in the amount of $58,300. Total not to exceed the amount of contract is $1,760.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, vote aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. It's unanimous. And now we move to the collective bargaining agreements. Do we anticipate a decision on this, or do we anticipate action being taken after we come back out of executive session?
Yes, sir.
Okay, can you estimate how long the executive session might take? Our clock is gone.
Half an hour.
Half an hour. Okay, so let's say that at 8 o'clock, no, I don't want to do that. Let's say in half an hour from now, we will come back and do a public session to potentially take some action. Great. So we are now in executive session.